Welcome to Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. On this podcast, we journey through the devastating experience of the death of a child. Grief is seldom discussed openly in our culture, and the death of a child makes people feel even more uncomfortable. We approach the topic openly and honestly, speaking to people who have lost loved ones and experts who help care for them. Whether you are a parent experiencing loss or someone who wants to support another going through this tragedy, this podcast strives to offer hope and help.
Welcome to episode number 239 of Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom. I'm Marcy Larson, Andy's mom. Today, I have the absolute pleasure to introduce you to Freddie, Randy's dad. And I'm going to start by saying the words that I ended with when I said goodbye to him after recording. And that is that Freddie really was a gift to me today. And I know that listening to him will be a gift to you as well. You see, today is a harder day for me because it is the 30th birthday I have had without my mom here. So she should be 72 years old today and she only lived to be 42. And it makes it for a tough day. And there were just other things that were reminding me of Andy, and I was just sort of feeling down. And Randy's story and talking to Freddie really reminded me that hope is important and that miracles still happen, and we still have to remember those miracles that happened. And he reminded me after we stopped recording that even me doing this podcast is showing that Andy was a miracle, and letting people know him is a miracle. And so thank you, Freddie. And now I want all of you to listen to Freddie, and I know you will just love him as much as I do. Thank you so much, Freddie, for agreeing to come on the Always Andy's Mom podcast today and talk to me.
Thank you for having me, Marcy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing all about your son, Randy.
Yeah, I look forward to telling the story because, you know, he was only here for 25 years, but he packed so much into that 25 years, and yeah. We're so proud of the legacy that he kind of left us.
Yeah.
You know, they say that you come into this world with nothing and you leave with nothing. And I don't agree with that.
Uh-huh.
I believe that the people that love you, when you leave this earth, you take that love with you. It transcends life and death. It goes beyond that.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel about Randy. He didn't leave here with nothing. He left here with a piece of me.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's how I've kind of come to reframe it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you just start out by just telling us all about your Randy?
Well, if he were here right now, I don't think he would... I don't know what stories he would be okay with me telling. Randy was my greatest nemesis.
Okay.
He and I had a very playful relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Obviously, with his special needs issues, I couldn't, you know, I couldn't roughhouse with him like you could a normal boy that age, you know, so I had to kind of alter how we did it. So it turned more into pranks, and he and I would prank each other and, you know, that kind of thing. So he was a jokester. He loved to tell jokes, you know, the corny kid jokes. One time he was telling jokes in high school, and they were so inappropriate, Marcy. I mean, but it was so cute because it was Randy, and everyone knew Randy, and they knew, like, oh, okay, let's, you know, let's give him a long leash here. Let's not bug him. But eventually the principal called us and said, your son is telling inappropriate jokes in school. And we're like, inappropriate jokes? Like, this kid tells knock-knock jokes. What are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, well, here's the joke. And he told it to us. And we were just floored. We were like, where did he hear this? It wasn't from us.
Right.
He was a jokester. He loved to dress up. So like in the middle of April, he would be, you know, dressed up as something from the 4th of July. Like he was already ready for Independence Day. And he had these huge glasses and this big hat. And he would walk around the neighborhood walking a dog, you know, with this outfit on. And it was just so bizarre, you know, and he would do that with all sorts of things. He loved Disney. So he'd wear Disney hats and outfits, and he'd embarrass you to death going into like a gas station or a grocery store because he would have this elaborate like Disney outfit on, and you go, Randy, will you take that off? And he'd go, no, and he'd just keep walking. And it was really cool to just kind of watch him kind of take the life that he had and make something of it. And he really did. He really only had 4 years of what I would say was a healthy upbringing.
Okay.
Or a healthy growing up. He got to the age of about 4 and a half, and mm-hmm. then he was diagnosed.
What was he diagnosed with?
Medulloblastoma.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Medulloblastoma.
He was stage 3.
Okay.
So it was in his, it was the base of his brain, up and down his spine, and in the cerebral spinal fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So he was considered a stage 3. And they gave him, at 4 and a half years old, they gave him less than 6 months to live.
Really?
Yeah, that was right around the millennium. It was 4 days after the millennium. That's when he was diagnosed.
Wow, that was a huge blow.
It was, especially because his mother and I were very young parents.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant with Randy when we were 19.
Okay.
So we didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have any friends that had this issue. You know, it wasn't like a common thing where we could just go to the next door neighbor and say, hey, we know your kid had a cancer. How did you deal with it? You know, we didn't have
that. Right.
So,
well, because you were still probably quite young, and probably a lot of your friends didn't even have kids at all yet, let alone kids who had cancer.
Right. And this was before the internet really took off, too. So we didn't have a computer or the internet where we could look up resources and, you know, look up what kind of clinical trials they were doing. We couldn't do that because we just didn't have the capability then that we do now. I could pull up my phone and look at treatment options now, but back then it just wasn't there. So that when the doctor told you something, you kind of took it, you know, as gospel truth. You didn't go WebMD it and try to question it. We just took it at face value and, okay, what do we do? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. Yeah. So where was his treatment at then?
His treatment initially was at the University of Chicago.
Okay.
In fact, you and I are almost kind of neighbors. We're connected by I-94, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, we live close to Chicago on the Indiana side. Okay. So he was treated initially at the University of Chicago, and after about a month, I wouldn't say a month and 2 weeks, 3 weeks, somewhere in there of chemo and radiation, they said that the tumor had actually spread. It had grown, and that conventional treatment was not going to work on him.
Okay.
And they gave him the maximum amount of radiation that a human can have. And they actually almost burned a hole through his stomach. They had just used so much radiation.
Yeah.
And the radiation does play a part in his story as he got older, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, because there are side effects from that, too.
Yeah.
It's so funny because you're putting this back in 2000. That's the year I graduated from medical school. So that's the year I started my pediatric residency, and I started working with kids with cancer that, you know, that very summer. So, because in my training, I was at the University of Iowa, so just down I-80 actually from Chicago. So yeah, I don't know. It just kind of brings me back to thinking about those kids.
Yeah. Yeah. They, he, once the conventional treatment was deemed a failure.
Yeah.
I'm going to contradict myself here. My parents did have a computer because I remember they were running AOL, America Online.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
And I went to their house and I did manage to get online. And I found a doctor who was doing a clinical study at the National Institutes of Health at NIH.
Okay.
So that started us on a journey there. We were going to Bethesda, Maryland for the next few years.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And none of the trials that Randy went through ever successfully made it out of phase one.
But he did remarkably well, because obviously he wasn't supposed to see his fifth birthday.
Right, right. We, to this day, we kind of don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, like I said, you know, Randy was considered a faith healing.
Okay.
So my dad, who was kind of a pastor at the time, he would call us and say, you know, while we were in Maryland, and he would say, go borrow a Bible from someone and just rub it up and down his spine. Just rub it up and down his back and pray over him while you do it. And I didn't question it. Marcy, when he told me to do it, I did it. Right. I went and borrowed a Bible. And every time he told us to do something like that, we did it. And there are so many stories, and we don't probably have time for that in this, but there are so many stories that I could tell you that whether you're a person of faith or not, there were some very miraculous things that happened in Randy's life.
Yeah.
And I don't want people to discount that, because faith, regardless of what you believe in, faith does give us hope.
Yes.
And when you don't have any faith, you don't have any hope. And that's another struggle that we deal with. But at the time, we had tremendous faith, and we believed that Randy was going to make it through anything, because up to that point he had.
Right, exactly.
And they kept saying, this is it, he's not going to make it. And we go, no, he is going to make it. And he did. And he just kept bouncing back.
Right.
And eventually they stopped telling us that he was terminal, and they did an MRI. And they said that they believed the cancer now was scar tissue.
Okay.
That it was no longer, cancerous. And they wanted to open him up and go in and do a biopsy and all that. And of course, we refused.
Yeah, of course not. I mean, you don't really need to.
Right.
At that point, like, okay.
The spread of it had stopped. So that was good enough for us.
Right.
You know, it affected Randy, though, in a lot of ways.
I'm sure.
He developed some hearing loss. He had cataracts. His feet, he had club feet, so they had to do surgery to correct his gait. He wasn't a real steady walker.
Mm-hmm.
Again, his pituitary gland had been shut down by the radiation, so he didn't grow. He got heavier, you know, but he didn't get taller. So he was just, you know, toward the end of his life, he was this little barrel running around with these long arms. And, you know, some things did grow, but height wise, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looked like a child.
Yeah.
You know, and he kind of acted like a child in a way.
Right. I was going to say, yeah. Because his development certainly was affected as well, right? Cognitively, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah.
With all that radiation, it just,
yeah,
it can't not affect you.
Well, and they did a craniotomy, and they tried to get what they could of the tumor, but they compared it to, like, if you took a wet paper towel and coated it over your hand, it was like a coating. it wasn't like a ball, you know, mass sitting there
really?
That they could lop off and it was gone. It was more like a coating or a covering of his
brain. Just kind of everywhere.
Yeah, it was he was ate up with it. He really was.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the story so much more miraculous.
Yeah.
You know, because we encountered complications from some of those trial study drugs. And my dad would pray about it and he would tell us what was going to happen. And we're like, how do you know this? You don't know anything about medical, you know, anything. And Marcy, my dad was right.
Yeah.
My dad was right. And I couldn't believe it.
Right.
And when they told us that Randy was going to pass away one night in the hospital because his heart had stopped the night before, he was in a coma. I'll spare you the whole story, but he was in this coma and my dad was there. And these doctors all came in the room and they said, Mr. Roten, you know, Randy, his heart stopped last night. And we believe that cancer has taken over his brain. And tonight is going to be the big event. Tonight is probably going to be it for him. And my dad looked at them and he looked at me and he said, if you don't accept what they're saying, send them away. And I did. I sent them out of the room and I could hear them mumbling something like, oh, he's in denial and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, I want you to go for a walk. And when you come back, I'm going to pray on this and we're going to figure, you know, we'll figure this out. Now, Marcy, that was hope. That was hope for us. And we needed it in that moment. It was like we'd been hit in the chest with a baseball bat. We were in shock. And my dad just sat there stoic. And he said, don't believe him. Don't worry about it. We're going to pray about this. And I said, okay. So we went for a walk. We came back. And my dad said, in 3 days, they're going to give him antibiotics. And when they do, he's going to awaken. And I said, why would they give him antibiotics? He doesn't have an infection.
Yeah.
You know, and the nurse kind of backed me up. And she said, why would we give him antibiotics? He has cancer. He's dying.
Yeah.
And we're like, no, we refuse to believe it. And Marcy, they actually came in that night and hung a bag of antibiotics. And I said, why are you giving him antibiotics? You said cancer had taken him. And she said, because he's in this coma and he's not urinating on his own. And if the urine backs up into his kidneys, we just didn't want him to get a kidney infection. So this was preventative.
Okay.
Marcy, he had a brain encephalitis the whole time and they didn't know it. He had a brain infection.
Oh, my word.
And they started treating it without even knowing it. My dad was right.
Wow.
My dad was right.
Wow.
Yeah. And I've told people that story and I went a little more into detail. And I've had grown men cry in front of me that they were so moved. They could just feel the spirit of God in the story.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I don't know what a person's particular faith is, but I will say to any of your listeners, faith does equal hope.
Mm-hmm.
Believe in what you believe in, but believe in it because it will at least give you something to hold on to. It'll give you some feeling of getting some control back in your life.
Yeah.
That's just my experience.
Right. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful story. And it is important to keep a bit of hope. Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't tell you now, you would probably think, you know, Freddie, you've been through that. You've experienced that. You probably believe more than anyone. And the truth of the matter is, you know, the fact that we lost Randy.
Yeah.
We fell so hard.
Yeah.
Marcy, we fell so hard.
Yeah.
And it just shattered everything we believed in.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we didn't have the right faith or, you know, I don't know, but it crumbled. And after that, we kind of fell apart with it. You know, and my dad was my best friend. He's still here. My parents are still with us, but my dad was my best friend and it drove a wedge between he and I that we still have not gotten over. It's Randy's loss has affected my relationships with my parents, his mother, my other two kids. You know, we've struggled a lot. So,
yeah. You know, it's so funny to hear you say that, because it reminds me very much of our life too, and that we have our foster son Valeriano, and I've never gone through the entire story of Valeriano here on the podcast, because it's a miracle. He's a living miracle. He came to this country initially illegally. You know, he had Alport syndrome, was found to be in kidney failure because he was at a refugee camp for teens, undocumented teens, and was drinking 20 bottles of water and realized he's in kidney failure. And I'm not going to go through everything, all of the just miracle after miracle after miracle that happened to have this kid, this Guatemalan kid, end up in our home in Michigan, getting a kidney transplant from a nephrologist who's in charge of the kidney transplant program, who spoke Spanish, who could speak to this boy. And from my husband walking down the stairs one day in December and saying, there's supposed to be a teenager in that bedroom. I can't walk down there one more time. I know God wants us to have a teenager in there, to 3 months later, us having that teenager and doing 6 months of becoming a foster family in 6 weeks. I mean, it was, and every time I doubted, or somebody at the foster agency would come up with a problem, I would just say, God's got it.
Yeah.
God has this, right? I mean, I just knew that every miracle would keep happening. When we got him, you know, we're going to get him, and he had to do dialysis on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I work Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Well, I like just go to my church, and we just have people coming out of the woodwork that's going to take this kid that doesn't hardly even speak English to dialysis. So anyway, it's a huge story, and if anyone ever wants to know it, it's amazing. But we were a miracle, and our family was a miracle.
Yeah.
And then I lost Andy in the way that I did, and it was like, you know, really, God? It was just so hard, because I was like, I trusted everything and I did everything and I just kept going when it seemed like things were not good with Valeriano. I just trusted and I just believed, and then I just felt really let down.
Yeah.
To just have then my boy just like felt like stolen from me in a car accident. And now I have this great, amazing kid, and you know, Valeriano's awesome and I love him as my own. But like, I feel like I had one that shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And then my one that should be here wasn't. And anyway, listening to your story of Randy's kind of miracle after miracle after miracle, and then it doesn't, it reminded me very much of how I felt like just really just let down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's actually a very accurate way to put it. And the more miracles you witness, the harder the fall is when something doesn't go the way you think it will. And, you know, when this happened to Randy, and I'll tell the story in a minute, but
yeah,
when this happened to Randy, it was so unexpected. Randy was in a good place in his life, his health.
Right.
Kind of wasn't a big issue for us. He wasn't having any problems or any clinical symptoms. He was doing fine. Then one night he wasn't.
Yeah.
And we fell hard.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that now, about what happened?
Yes.
I mean, not that you want to, but yeah.
Well, I you know what? It's important.
It is.
Do it because of that, but normally I don't.
Yeah, right.
But so as I mentioned, Randy's mom and I had divorced in July of that year. It was 2020. We were, you know, pandemic crazy, just like everyone else was. My ex-wife had moved out, and she had taken Randy and moved in with her mother across town where we live. And my youngest son, he stayed with me. So I had custody of him, and she kind of had custody of Randy, even though he was an adult.
Right.
So she was at my house. She was at my house, and she was visiting with me and my youngest son. Mm-hmm. And I decided to go and take a shower. So I was showering, and a couple of minutes into my shower, I hear someone pounding on the bathroom door. And I didn't know what it was. You know, I couldn't hear because of the water and the fan. And I hurried up, and I knew something was wrong, but I just didn't know what. I hurried up and shut the water off, dried off as quick as I could. And I came out, and my youngest son and his mother were gone. And I didn't know what had happened. So my phone rings, and it's my ex-mother-in-law, who Randy was staying with. And she said she was crying hysterically, and I couldn't understand her. And I was trying to make out what she was saying. And she was saying that Randy went down and that he had some sort of seizure and he's on the ground. And I said, you have to call 911. You have to, like, this is time is critical right now. So she was so hysterical, she wouldn't get off the phone. So I went, I hurried up and got dressed. I'm soaking wet still. I get in my car and I just start heading over there. I'm running red lights and I'm cutting people off. I don't care. Right. And as I almost got to the house, I ran into a police officer and I stopped and I pulled up alongside him. And I said, will you please follow me? Like, I have an emergency. I know something's wrong, but I don't know what. Would you please just follow me? And he said, yeah. And he did. And we got to the house, and my ex-wife and my son were already there tending to Randy. I walked in, and Randy was on the ground. He was on the floor of her kitchen. And she had said that he had had a seizure. And while she was watching him seize, she hurried up and ran over to him because he was sitting on like a higher up chair. And she helped him down to the ground.
Uh-huh.
So he had been on the ground basically ever since she put him there. So I got there with the policeman, and Randy was on the ground and he had bitten through his tongue. Mm-hmm. His tongue was sticking out and he seized so hard that he bit through his tongue. So I started doing CPR on him.
And had 911 been called by that point, I would imagine?
Yes, 911. By then, my ex-wife had called 911. She was on the phone with them.
Okay.
And the policeman had also called it in.
But sure.
And that was a big deal for me because I thought if a cop calls it in, it's, you know,
it'll be quicker.
Yeah, right? It'd be quicker, a quicker response. So the policeman and I both start working on Randy. While the policeman is calling it in on his radio, I'm doing chest compressions, which I've never done in my life.
Yeah.
Until I did it to my own son.
Yeah.
That is the worst feeling of that you can experience in that instance. So I'm working on him, and the cop says, you know, I'm starting to get sweaty, and the cop says, I'll take over. So he starts doing it, and I'm trying to pry Randy's mouth open to clear his airway. And the last breath he ever took went over my fingers. He went, and he just released the air that he had. And that was the last breath he ever took. And so the ambulance finally got there. They put a machine on him that does the chest compressions for you. And he never showed any signs of life he was already gone, but we didn't believe it.
Right. Right.
We thought, you know, Randy's really going to be mad when he wakes up. You know, he's really going to, like, he's going to be hurting with his tongue and he's going to be mad because he's got to eat soup. You know, we were already thinking about tomorrow. And we didn't know that there wouldn't be one with him. So we got in the car, and mind you, my youngest son, his brother, he's belligerent. He's on the ground outside in the grass. He's crying.
Yeah.
He's shaking. Very, very traumatic. It's very hard for me to think about.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, again, we didn't know that he was gone. We just assumed that the ambulance, they were going to probably get him back on the way to the hospital. So, you know, we thought the professionals were there. They were there to save the day, right?
Right. And Randy's heart had stopped in the past, right? You know,
yeah.
Obviously when he was going through all the illness stuff, so not recently, but it's not like, you know what I mean? It didn't seem like it wasn't an insurmountable thing, right?
And that was my word. It wasn't going to be insurmountable for him because he had been through this before and he'd come through it before.
Right.
If I could, you know, like I said earlier, they've written this kid off several times and he's bounced back every time. So we just thought this was one of those. And we drove to the hospital and I remember I was very calm. My ex-wife went with me and she was a little less calm. She was pretty upset. And I said, don't worry. We're going to be okay. Don't worry. It's going to be all right.
Yeah.
We got to the hospital and we beat the ambulance there. And the ambulance, when it finally did pull up, it was slow with no lights on, no sirens, quiet.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that's not a good sign.
Yeah.
That's really not good. So they got him out and we watched them from the waiting room window. We watched them wheel him in. And about 20 minutes later, a nurse came and took us into like a side room, like a consultation room. And she said, just wait here. The doctor's going to come and talk to you. Well, by that time, my dad had showed up. So it was me, my ex-wife, and my dad. We're sitting there. The ER doctor comes in and she said, are you Randall's parents? And we said, yes. And she said, oh, you know, and it was so cold and just so, I'll never forget it. And she said, oh, he's gone. And we're like, oh, well, he went to the bathroom or you guys are letting him up already? Like, you know, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And she said, no, he didn't make it. And I looked at my dad probably like I did when I was little.
Yeah.
Like, daddy, help, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew we were in trouble because he looked back at me and he had the same look. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
we're in trouble. This is bad. So they took us back there to where Randy was. And my dad did the worst thing that he could have done, which was he took a picture of Randy on the gurney. And it broke my heart, Marcy. It broke my heart. And that started the division between me and my dad. He did end up deleting the picture, but the damage had been done. He cut me pretty deep on that one. I wasn't expecting this to be a photo opportunity. That was the worst night of my life.
Yeah.
And I came home. Now, mind you, Marcy, the whole thing, I kind of spread the story out, but the whole thing from the time we got the call at my house to the time they pronounced him dead was less than an hour.
Wow.
We had less than an hour to process this and absorb this. And we weren't ready. We were just blown away. And the second worst night of my life was his service. I mean, seeing your child laying there is just...
Oh, yeah.
I can't describe it. I cannot describe it.
Nope. No.
So, you know, we knew there was a problem. In 2017, Randy had lost feeling in his left side, almost like he'd had a stroke. He went paralyzed. And we rushed him to the hospital they didn't want to touch him because of how complex his medical history was. So they sent us to Indianapolis, the hospital in Indianapolis, and they did a head scan and they said that he had what was called meningiomas, which is a side effect of radiation.
Okay.
and he had several of the meningiomas. For the your listeners, is basically little pop-up tumors in his brain. There was one particular meningioma that was sitting on a blood vessel, and it had popped the blood vessel, and that had paralyzed Randy on his left side. So they wanted to go in and they wanted to cut the meningioma out, but they said that there were so many of them that there was no way they were going to get them all. There was no guarantee that the surgery would even be a success. Now, this was 2017, Marcy. In a couple months later, we were taking Randy to Disney World, and Randy was looking forward to this trip, and we didn't want to take that away from him. This kid lived Disney, so we're like, okay, what we're going to do, and me and his mother just kind of talked about it between us. We're going to work with him. We're going to stall them for time. We're going to put them off. We're going to just keep putting them off the surgery, and we're going to work with him, and we're going to get his feeling back. And Marcy, we did. By the end of the week, his brain had re-soaked the blood that had popped from the blood vessel, and he gradually did get his feeling back.
Just amazing.
And I remember thinking how great that was. Yeah, it was just amazing. Like Monday, he was completely paralyzed on his left side. By Friday, he was at a special needs dance with his girlfriend.
Oh my
I mean,
gosh.
that's how,
I mean, that's the thing.
yeah.
He just was a living miracle. That's the whole. I mean, it's beautiful. It's beautiful, beautiful. But that's why you're right. That's why the fall was so great.
Yeah. And he like I said, the Disney trip is something we didn't want to take away from him because it meant so much to him, and we knew the rehab and all that. We The last time they opened up his brain and went in there, it changed who he was forever. And we did not want to go into another surgery, and open him up again and do, have all the rehab. And plus there was no guarantees that it would work. So we were like, you know what, we're going to forego the surgery. We did make the decision to not do the surgery, and we decided to just do 6 month MRIs to kind of make sure everything was okay. So that's the decision we went with. And to this day, I think that's one of the huge regrets that we have. We wonder, had we have done the surgery, would it have changed anything? Would it have mattered?
Yeah, it's hard to know.
We don't know. We'll never know that answer, if it would have helped him or hurt him or anything. We don't know. But
All those what ifs just kind of haunt you, though, don't they?
oh, they do. They do. And they're the worst thing. And I've listened to David Kessler a lot. And I've listened to Gwen a few times as well on your site. And I am slowly learning to kind of cut that grief loose, because just the fact that I'm on your podcast now, that should tell you how much I love my son. Not loved, love. I still
Love.
love. And I really did not want to put him through anything that was unnecessary, but I would never have done anything to let harm happen to him. If I really felt that that surgery would save his life, of course I would have
Yeah,
done.
you would, of course you would have.
But
Of course you would have. But when they did subsequent MRIs then afterwards, though?
they did up until the COVID year. And then after that, when COVID really kicked in, then it became kind of like an emergency only situation, and they didn't want to do an MRI. So that 2020 was kind of the year that whatever was going on kind of went unchecked. Again, Marcy, I don't know what we would have done about it anyway, to be fair.
Because when they were doing the serial ones before that, 2018, 2019, had they looked relatively unchanged, or were there little subtle differences?
Like millimeters, maybe not even.
Yeah, like nothing to make, get you very concerned, I'm sure.
They told us that this type of tumor is something that most people live with their whole lives and don't even know they have it in their brain. Right. Because it's not that kind of tumor where, you know, not like the medulloblastoma that he'd had before, but this was a direct result of the radiation that he had. Yeah. This was a side effect of that. You know, in essence, we kind of mortgaged his future. We just didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a trade that I would do the same thing again.
Yeah.
Because everything I did was because I love him.
Yeah.
Everything I did was because I wanted him here with us. And are you going to make every decision right? No. You know, you're going to make mistakes. When it comes to a medically complex child, it's very easy to make mistakes because medicine is not an exact science, right? No, we're still finding out things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, would he have been treated differently with medulloblastoma today versus, you know, 24 years ago? Who knows?
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, we took a chance and, you know, this time we did guess wrong and it just didn't
work. Well, you say that, but you don't know that, actually.
Right.
You really don't know that.
Right.
You know, because you don't know that he would have survived the surgery. You don't know that there wouldn't have been additional complications. I mean, you don't know. They were very open and honest with you that they couldn't take them all out.
Right.
Right. They wouldn't have been able to take them all out. And you have no idea now which one may have been the one.
Right.
To have caused that trouble that night.
Right.
It may have been one that could have been taken out. Maybe not.
Right.
Maybe it was totally different.
Yep.
Right.
And you know, like I said, he'd bounced back so quickly. I mean, we didn't feel like this was a pressing matter. Like we needed to get to it right now. It's urgent.
Oh, no.
And
no, not at all.
He got to go to Disney and he got to enjoy himself. And that was the last trip that we got to take him to Disney. So we were really glad that we got to do that with him, even though, like you said, you know, you could second guess yourself forever in a day. We could all play the what if game.
Right.
You know, if you guys didn't go to the baseball game that night, would that have happened? Well, you could surmise all you want. But we don't know.
Right. Right.
And we don't know what our fate will be. So I like to think that, you know, Randy, no matter how it turned out, he knows I love him.
Yeah.
And he knows that I meant nothing but good for him. And I would trade my life any day to have his back. You know?
Yeah, I know. But I would too. And we started talking about this a little bit earlier before we started recording. So I want to bring this up now a little too. So, you know, you mentioned obviously Andy had drawn that picture. Andy drew the picture of his family. And when he drew the picture, we weren't all in the picture. And I questioned why we weren't all in the picture. And he said he wasn't going to grow up all the way and he was going to be in heaven. And so that I take back to myself sometimes when I go through the what ifs of, what if we hadn't gone to the baseball game? What if, you know, I wouldn't have let him come upstairs to change and we would have been further on the road and all of that.
Yeah.
But then I will come back to that picture thinking, but he knew he wasn't going to grow up all the way. He wasn't going to grow up all the way and he was going to be in heaven. So that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, and you've got kind of a similar kind of story with that too.
Yes.
So do you want to share that now?
Yeah. So Randy, and mind you, Randy's sense of awareness wasn't, I guess, what Randy didn't think like that.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, Randy did not think of the afterlife. And, you know, we had always tell him that Jesus healed him and he didn't know anything about Jesus. You know, it didn't register with him.
Register.
So Randy he kind of did little like premonition type of things that kind of told us that he was not going to be with us going forward. And he did the one that I really recall. My mother and I cried about this to each other while we watched it. But I actually have a video of him doing a Disney song called Lost in the Woods. It was, the lyrics speak about you going on a different path than mine, and that you're not going to be able to follow me. And, you know, at the time I didn't think anything about it because, you know, Randy's music was very eclectic and he listened to a lot of different songs, but that was the last karaoke that he did. And that just so happened to be the last song that he ever performed. And it's just so heart-wrenching to watch. Me and my ex-wife watched it last night, and it just destroys you. It just hurts so badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he had little hints. He said little things and you know, you kind of dismissed them because it was Randy, and Randy always had these little quips and one-liners, and you know, some of the things you didn't take to heart, you know, because it was Randy. You know, Randy was just talking, and he just said little things that his girlfriend,
yeah, in quotes, yeah,
that's how he terms it. She was the love of his life, and that is true. But even with her, you know, the last text he sent her was the day before he passed, and he said, I love you and forever, you know, the way he kind of phrased the text. Yeah. And Randy never spoke of forever. He never talked about tomorrow or what's coming up. He was very present. He was very much in the moment.
Yeah.
And when I actually saved that text and sent it to myself because it was so foretelling. Randy was basically telling her goodbye. And he was saying that the love he feels for her will go with him. And it did.
And it's forever.
And he had a lot of great memories with her, and that was his great love, you know. So he even got to know love in his life.
Yeah, that's a gift too.
Yeah. And a lot of kids don't necessarily get to have that happen. You know, their health problems just they're too much for them. And Randy's was too much too, but he did find a way to make it work for him. In a way, he kind of made it part of his charm. He was a little charmer, you know. He never met a stranger. He loved everybody he met, and typically they liked him back. You know, it wasn't always love at first sight like it was for him, but I don't mean to make it seem so depressing, because Randy was not depressing. He was so, he was so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and he was cool without trying to be.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was great. Like, can I just tell you one story?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is symbiotic of the relationship that Randy and I had. So he's in the hospital with this paralysis. Now, mind you, Randy had been incontinent pretty much since 4 years old. So he wore those Depends training pull-up pants.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
And in the hospital, all he had on was those training pants and a hospital gown that ties in the back. So I don't know. I asked my ex if I could tell this story, and she said she was okay with it. So anyway, he's laying there in the hospital bed, but he's got enough strength to kind of raise himself up and still kind of play with his little cars or read his joke books or whatever he needed to do. So as he raised up, his body was kind of a weird shape, and he had this huge divot in his back that created this opening inside of those training pants. So I had a pocket full of pennies, and every time he would raise up, I would just throw a couple of pennies down his back into the training pants. So this went on for a couple hours. He didn't even realize I was, I just thought it was funny, you know, because he didn't realize I was doing it. So a nurse comes in and she goes, okay, Randy, it's time to change you. And he goes, okay. You know, so he gets up, you know, we help him, you know, we carry him to the bathroom, and they didn't pull the training pants down. They would just rip them off because they had ripped away sides, and they ripped it, and coins just went everywhere. And the nurse looked at me and she's like, "You're wrong." And then we all just started laughing. And Randy starts yelling at me and he's so mad. And that was the kind of stuff we did. I would call him and tell him I bought a puppy and he would be like, "Oh, I can't wait to see the puppy." And I'd be like, "April Fool's, Randy," you know. And he was just as bad. He would get me too. He was the strongest kid I ever met. He'd put you in a headlock and he would hurt you. I mean, he
Oh,
had
God.
adult strength, but
Yeah.
I mean, just little things like that. You know, I that's why the relationship was, you know, so special to me because, you know, when he left, it was like he took the fun with him. You know, he took the laughter with him. He was our sense of humor, and it was gone.
You know, it's funny when you mention that because your first email you wrote to me, you wrote all about Randy and you wrote about losing Randy, and I got to the end of it and I thought, wow, he really lost himself too. And that was just my overwhelming feeling, is like you just lost you, like you're, 'cause so much of your purpose in life was being Randy's dad, because he had so many needs, and that you did so much for him. And it's funny is then when you wrote back to me, you ended up saying a little bit later in the email that, because you were sort of apologizing a little bit, like I felt like I was too down in my email, and but I really feel like I lost a part of myself. And I thought, and I s said back, yes, you did. That's exactly what I was thinking as I was reading it, because it's so much more than just losing your son, right?
My dad had a really good saying. He said that when Randy's heart stopped, so did his. Randy didn't just leave here with one heart. He left here with many hearts. He took us with him, you know, in a way. And but you know, again, you can reframe that, Marcy. And I'll tell you why. And this is in part because of you. Because I think your podcast brings Andy into my life. I know who Andy is because of you. And I just think that's so beautiful that you've perpetuated his name. You've kept it going. You have brought Andy to a whole new audience that never met him. He's affected our lives. And I want that legacy for my son too. I want Randy to be remembered and I want him to be loved like that too.
And this is your way of doing that today, right? And sharing Randy like this
Right.
is that we can all feel Randy and feel Randy's love and feel just so much of him, right?
Aren't they still with us though? Like I feel like Andy's here. I feel like Randy's here. I really feel like their presence is with us now. And we're bringing that about, our love, even our yearning. It's just such a special thing. It really is. And it's made me feel his presence more so than I have in the past. I think sometimes the pain kind of drowns out any sort of positive, you know, when you're hurting and you're in pain, just everything seems down, everything seems negative and bad. But, you know, Randy was just, I don't know how to describe him. He was the most remarkable, unique person I had ever met. And I love my other two kids just as much as him. I'm not putting him up above anyone else, but I can safely say that Randy was very unique, and his battle in his life, the fights that he had to fight were pretty unique as well.
Of
And
course.
he got through them with with simplicity, with a sense of humor, with laughter and courageousness, and he was resilient. And I really those are the qualities that I want your listeners to know about my son. You know, that he embodied some really great qualities for someone that you wouldn't think maybe would, but he did. And I feel like Andy and Randy are here with us. I just feel like they're a part of us no matter what we do. We couldn't escape it if we wanted to, and we don't want to. But you know, I know your beautiful son because of what you're doing now. And it's so amazing. It's so beautiful. I mean, I know Andy Larson. I couldn't have said that 6 months ago, but I know him.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it's amazing.
And I love that. And I love that.
You should. You should be very proud.
But I love that we are letting everyone know Randy too. And it's so funny because I talked earlier about how I was just felt so let down.
Yeah.
When Andy died like that.
Yeah.
But I have gotten, now that we're further out, I have gotten that I can appreciate the miracles again.
Yeah.
Like at the beginning, I was like almost mad about the miracles because I just didn't even want to be a part of both in some ways because I just was so mad.
Yeah.
But I think the further out we get, the more we can appreciate that too. And so hopefully that will happen too, and that you can appreciate the miracle of the gift of 20 years that you weren't supposed to have with him.
Right.
That you got.
Right.
I mean, what a miracle those 20 years were.
Right.
And you feel robbed at the end for sure. But wow, those 20 years were an awesome gift too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just so grateful. And, you know, like I said, I wanted to come on here and talk about a life well lived, not just a death that we experienced, but a life right. that he lived, because he lived, he was here. And he did something. And, you know, I don't look at Randy in the terms of like the future, like he was going to give us grandchildren and, you know, he was going to be the CEO of a company. Like Randy didn't have to do any of that for me. He just had to be here. You know, he just had to yeah. keep on being Randy and doing what Randy did. And I would have been fine with that. That would have put a big old smile on this dad's face. But, you know, I don't, our faith is a very complex subject because, like you said, we had a very hard fall from grace.
Yeah.
I think we get mad at God because it gives us some sort of sense of control in a situation that's completely out of our control, right? There's nothing we can do about what happened. And it's easy to, you know, no one took my son away. No one hurt him, but he was taken away anyway. Well, who do I blame? Who can I be mad at? Because that's part of grief, right? Is anger. So who do I be mad at? Well, I'll be mad at God because that makes the most sense. It must be God. God took him, you know, and that's my way of trying to get some control back. It doesn't make a difference. Being mad doesn't help anything, and it doesn't bring him back. It just makes you miserable.
And I have to tell you what I've said this on the podcast many times because my pastor said this to me, and it helped so much. Is first of all, he said, you know, you go ahead and be mad at God because God can take it. And I kept thinking that's right. I mean, God's going to keep on loving me whether I'm mad or not, so it's okay. And I felt like I still had faith if I was mad at God because we're still in relationship. If I was mad at I wouldn't be mad at somebody I wasn't in relationship with.
Right. So,
but the thing that really hit me was when he said, on the side of the road that night, God was crying with you. And when I think of God crying beside me, well, that's a God I can love.
Yeah.
When I think of a God who like willy-nilly just snatched Andy, that makes me mad. But if I think of God sitting there crying beside me, then that I can be okay with.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what the image that I like to keep in my mind of him just being there and crying with me and holding me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a beautiful way to think about it. I really do. I hope that we can come to some sort of place where at least we find some level of peace.
Yeah.
Because a life of pain and misery is just no way to live.
No.
I've done, you know, destructive things. I hit the bottle really hard after Randy. I don't do that anymore because I was being mean, but I had to get off of that. But I took a very hard downward spiral.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the relationship that I had with him. I couldn't believe that my little buddy was gone. And it just, you know, I likened it to like when you have a leg amputated on the battlefield, you know?
Yeah.
Like in World War One, they're all in this muddy battlefield and the doctor, the medic is cutting your leg off, right? They just give you a local anesthetic and they got to get the leg off and you're left with this bloody stump that's just hurting. And that's how I feel. I feel like I have this bloody stump that sometimes it just hurts. Sometimes it hurts and bleeds. Sometimes it doesn't feel like anything. It's gone. You go through the entire gamut of emotions, but it's just like losing yourself. It really is. Yeah. And you're right. I lost myself in that. Hard to admit that, but
yeah,
but men aren't expected to be that way. Men are expected to be a lot more. We're the rock of the family and we're the stoic ones. But Marcy, I can tell you when we were planning Randy's service, I ran out of the funeral home in tears. When they were talking about my son in the past tense, I could not believe it. And I ran out of there just, you know, I'm completely embarrassing myself, I'm sure. And my ex-wife sat there by herself and got it done. She just dealt with it. And she did it on her own. And I, to this day, she's one of the strongest women I've ever met. She got through that almost completely without me because I was no good to anyone. And we're just now starting to get to where we're trying to help each other and we're trying to, you know, boost each other up. But it was the early days were just so, you know, the early days are the worst. We're very introverted people. We don't have a lot of friends. So it's not like we have support people banging down our door or reaching out. We don't. We've become shut-ins. We don't leave the house unless we have to. It's really been a very hard existence. Like I said, it's been 3 years, 3 months, and 9 days.
Yeah. Well, and you said you have been grieving together, though. And
yeah,
because she came back to the house.
Yes. Yes. She lives with me.
Right. You said, I mean, you invited her back into the house because you thought you would be better grieving together than apart.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't think me and her ever, we've always loved each other. We were just very young when we had kids and, you know, just over the years we had changed. And I felt that I needed to go in a different direction. And you know what? Marcy, I'll be honest with you. I thank God that she is here. She's probably saved my life a few times. I mean, you know, just because I've developed health issues since that, I had a pulmonary embolism and I've never had a history of that.
Yeah.
Congestive heart failure now, you know, I'm on heart meds. I've never been on heart meds. It even changed me physically. Yeah. So
it does.
Yeah.
It does.
They say the body doesn't differentiate between emotional pain and physical pain. It sends the same sort of signals out and it does affect you physically. So, you know, I just thank God that, you know, at least I have her as a support system. And that's kind of who I need.
Yeah.
You know, I need Randy's mom.
Yeah.
Because Randy's mom gets it. Whereas someone else that I meet
isn't going to,
that I would try to explain to, it's not the same.
No.
Yeah. Me and her and my youngest son live together and we grieve together and we're all just trying to work through the complexity of our feelings, you know, because you're never going to get over this. It's not something you ever get over. And I don't want to get over it, to be honest.
No. It's part of you.
I just want the pain to subside.
Yeah.
Now I want the pain to be replaced with the happy memories of a good life lived in 25 years. So, you know, we've got a lot of work to do, but
But you've been doing a lot of hard work too. Yeah.
Like I said, I got to thank you for a lot of that. You turned me on to some resources. Listening to your podcast and hearing the experiences of other parents, that has been invaluable. that you don't realize what a great resource you have become. It's really been helpful. And when I hear the other parents of some of the more medically complex kids, it's like, I get it. You know, I understand that. Like, so, you know, there's some losses that I don't understand and will never understand because my kid didn't go through that. He went through something else, and I understand that world better. Yeah, I'm just so proud of the life he lived. You know, I really am.
Yeah, and you should be.
I'm happy to share him with you and your listeners, and this is really a special thing. It really is.
Well, thank you so much for sharing, Randy.
Thank you for letting me share, Randy, and thank you for sharing, Andy. If no one's ever said it before, thank you, because I think about Andy often. I really do.
Thanks for listening. If you found this helpful and would like to support the podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and comment. To help financially, you can type Andy's mom, one word, to the number 53555. This provides a link to GiveButter, which allows donations through PayPal, Venmo, Apple Pay, or credit cards. GiveButter will provide a receipt of your tax-deductible donation. Or you can visit the donation page at andysmom.com/donate. Always Andy's Mom is a registered 501c3 and can receive donations through Thrivent Financial and Benevity. Marcy loves hearing from listeners. Please feel free to reach out to her via email at marcy@andysmom.com or on the Instagram or Facebook Always Andy's Mom accounts. Sign up for the email list to get weekly episode links as well as pictures of Marcy's guests and their children. Together, let's work to inspire hope one day at a time.